Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 352. This week, it is only dos peoples. I am Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. How you doing, sir?
I am doing really good, Kevin. How about yourself?
As I warned you before we were going to record this, I am watching Game 6 of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Because it's only the second round. It's probably called the conference champion or the division championship round or some silly shit like that that I don't really care about. But game six, Penguins up 1-0 as of this moment right here. And there's going to be a little bit of tension during this broadcast, so if I scream at anybody, just know that you've been warned up front.
All right, you've been warned, and thank you for the hockey update, Kevin.
Yeah, you know, I've always wanted to do that with Jeremy, and I've never really talked him into it, since he's a big hockey fan, too, of doing, like, a Stanley Cup preview, because 2 years it was the Red Wings, his team, against the Penguins. And I really couldn't talk him into it, which was, I think it would have been a lot of fun to do that show. But, you know, maybe if his team isn't involved, he'll be more likely to talk. We'll see. But, okie dokie. Well, that makes things a whole lot better going up 2-0. Well, speaking of good scoring, the WWE had been scoring well with the Stunt Granny audience. They had appreciated the efforts of making things make sense and go in a logical fashion, and I would have to say that there are a lot of people that think that this week was a little bit of a misstep.
Yeah, I'll say that. Wait. The two main angles worked out well, and were very good. But, oh man, by the time Sin Cara beat Rusev, who we just started rebuilding last week, I was done. And then when Devon Dudley pinned Kofi Kingston with a short arm clothesline, I just blew my lid. 50-50 booking. This, you know, you beat me this week, I beat you this week. We got to beat the champions. We got to beat the challengers. You know, distraction finishes all night long. It just left a bad, very bad taste in my mouth, and probably.
Yeah, it was another one of those things that sometimes I don't notice the forest from the trees, and I knew that individual matches were ending badly, and at some point I was just like, why is there another roll-up finish? Like, I'm like, oh my god, and then they even pulled one, and I agree with you as far as the two big angles, but even in the main event, I believe Carl Anderson lost to a roll up, or no, he won with a he eliminated Jimmy or Jay, whichever one. They've gone back to not really caring again.
Right. Yeah. That the roll up is so overused. Let's work in a small package. Let's work in a backslide.
And that was Jeremy and I were talking about this a little bit. He goes, oh my god, at least have a small package. And I'm like, at least in that instance, it makes some sense, like, that you can hold the guy down. Even with a handful of tights like Carl Anderson had, like, I always sit there and I go, there's no reason that this person shouldn't be able to turn his shoulder off of the mat. You know, they rarely have enough leverage in that situation to me to make it believable. You know, the small pack. Oh, and that's what I was getting to. The small package, it at least makes some sense. You have the guy's limbs tied up. your opponent's limbs tied up. To at least make it understandable why the gentleman could not kick out in time. But yeah, that was not used once. I do believe wasn't it three roll-ups last night?
I believe it was three roll-ups and a clothesline, and put away some of our
my gosh, that that reminds me of when I went to a live event at the Jaffa Mosque in the fine city of Altoona, Pennsylvania, when I was a child, and the Ultimate Warrior was feuding with Andre the Giant at the time. Well, Andre, not to my knowledge at the time, of course, was in pretty bad physical shape. So the match consisted of, as our neighbor called it, three clothespins in a splat. This version of three roll-ups in a clothesline made me think of that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was three clotheslines and a splash for those not versed in wrestling for some reason.
Right, yeah.
for the translation from our neighbor, but yeah, it was that was pretty bad in retrospect. Like I said, like it was one of those things that I guess I didn't really pay attention. Aside from being disgusted with the finishes each time that they happened.
Yeah, it grew with you. It grew throughout the night. And I think the Rusev loss to Sin Cara was the most egregious because there was no point in them at all. I mean, the heat is Rusev destroying Sin Cara right in front of Kalista. I mean, I don't understand why you don't just do that. Yeah, it defied logic to me.
Yeah, even if there is a distraction of that nature, Rusev should be kicking out, getting up, being completely angry about the situation.
Yeah.
And then really taking it to Sin Cara and finishing the job in short order. Yeah, I mean, just because it was a distraction finish, that's kind of their thinking. But Rusev really needs to be back on a winning streak.
Yeah, absolutely.
He has done nothing with the League of Nations to merit being the killer that he was, you know, a mere year. Well, okay, a little bit over a year ago. So he could really use the win, and I mean Sin Cara is the perfect tool for it to happen. And you know, there are other small guys on the lineup that they could say, oh, this, you know, and they've done it with Kalisto already, that hey, this could be Kalisto, he's just a fly, yada yada yada, you know, just it's going to be the same spiel with Kalisto every time, honestly.
Right,
but
yeah.
Rusev kind of needs his story retold a little bit.
Yeah, he needs to go back on a dominant winning streak. There should be no doubt about that. There should be no one who thinks otherwise. I don't understand how that even gets pushed through. The idea of him getting beat this week, even made it all the way through all the channels to being approved by Vince. I don't get it.
Yeah, because, and I'm trying to think of what the other roll-up was, and I'm blanking on it right now.
Page rolling up Charlotte.
Oh, but yeah, yet again, another distraction roll-up.
Yeah, I mean, which I guess that had its purpose.
Right.
To say that, you know, Charlotte's in trouble without Ric Flair at ringside, although he was at ringside, and he actually caused a distraction that led to her getting rolled up.
Yeah, we'll forget about that point right now.
Yeah, I mean, guess of all the roll-ups on the show, that was the one, okay, you want to keep one in, let's go right ahead and keep that one in.
Yeah, that's the other thing that was a little surprising, honestly. It's just, to go back to the, it got approved. It's just like, didn't somebody at some juncture go, man, we have three of these in the same night. This isn't right.
Yeah, right.
Or even after the second one occurs on the show, I mean, they're kind of infamous for changing track even while they're recording. So it's just like one of those things, just like, why not go, oh, we really kind of goofed up on this one. Let's change this finish now. Nope, not a problem at all.
That never should have made it through. There needs to be more variations on the finishes. I mean, even just things like, you know, switching out a roll-up for a small package, you know, switching out interference for a heel actually doing something, actual outside interference. Don't want to do a clean finish in a match. You know, let's at least vary these finishes.
Yeah, and it was kind of funny. I think some of the main event stuff, well, and not actually the main event itself, which that was one thing that I didn't really get to do too many corrections on the column today. But that was one that at the beginning of the night, I thought in no way that Big Cass versus Jericho was going to be the main event.
I when Stephanie said it, I didn't believe it. I didn't believe it. And then when the six-man elimination match went on at the 10 o'clock hour, I was just like, wow, this is really going to happen. And obviously, they had an angle, and I mean, the ratings are out. I mean, their ratings are down from last week, but nothing catastrophic.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I didn't pay too much attention to those this week, although I did see a drop-off in the third hour, which, again, it's just, even the crowd seemed like a good crowd for the first 2 hours, and at some point, they just seemed to check out.
Right, yeah, that happens in the third hour a lot. I mean, in the end, it was a good angle. I mean, people were into Dean Ambrose. I mean,
oh,
tearing up the jacket's a good follow up to the breaking of the plant. You know, because they're
well, yeah,
but the two are quite equal.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty fun that somebody did that to Jericho's jacket. Just the fact alone that he went heel to, and this is what came of it is fantastic, honestly. Mitch the Plant, more over than most of the roster.
Oh, without a doubt.
If Dean Ambrose can put over a plant, I'm willing to bet that he can put over just about anything at this juncture. But it's, yeah, I mean, it was a very fun ending. And it was a good way because you did that matchup itself. It was really an odd thing, because that would have been another one that the finish, I think, would have been questionable, because you can't really have, well, or it would have been another distraction finish.
Yeah, that's what I predicted, and I was halfway through, so good for them to be creative on that one.
So, yeah, it is kind of funny that of all things, they at least did something different with that. Although, every time, I feel horrific for the announcers who have to sell complete stupidity. It's just like, oh, who's coming out to attack Chris Jericho in the dark? Oh,
right.
I don't know. Maybe the guy that's been feuding with him for the last month plus and just got a plant whacked over him that you guys have specifically mentioned during the show.
Right, yeah, but no, they were instructed to wait for the reveal, and that's just the way they do it. I mean, it was Dean Ambrose, so it wouldn't have been anyone else. But you know, that's how they do things.
I don't blame them. That's why I always say that I feel bad for them. Because I know in that instance, it isn't one of their choices where they go freelance and make a bad joke or something of that nature.
Right.
Or they just don't know how to communicate between each other. You know that someone's feeding them that, and you're just going, oh, those poor guys. They just are being made to look so stupid right now. One of the few times I feel bad for the announcers.
Right. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I mean, it's the way it is. They're told to announce and to present the product in a certain way, and there's no deviation from that way. If there was deviation, Mauro Ranallo might be in that. Michael Cole's chair, or Jim Ross would be in Michael Cole's chair. But Vince does trust that Michael Cole will do exactly as he wants, and JBL will be his voice when he gets in an ornery mood about something. And
no, you don't say. And Vince would never get ornery,
right? Yeah.
Where did that the tangent about the announcers, because it was about the main event not being the main event. I guess it's another instance. I did not see the NXT angle where Cass had to fill in for Enzo for an injury then.
I think I did, but I have no memory of it at all. I mean, literally none.
Okay, so I know it's only been a 2-week sample here, but Cass is doing everything you could ask of him at this point. Like, I would not be entirely surprised if he ever gets a singles run. Even with the as good as the act is together.
Right, yeah, no. I mean, I think that this is a trial run for something bigger for Cass. I mean, Enzo's a charismatic guy, so hopefully he won't... the charisma will make up for the lack of size, and he won't get left in the dust. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty obvious that they're very high on Cass, and in particular, I'm sure, that the fans in love. So, yeah, he's getting his opportunity here. No timetable been stated for when Enzo's going to be cleared to return. So, I mean, in the meantime, this is what we're getting, and it's been good. Cass has been doing everything, as you said, everything that can be asked of him. He's performed well. So it's not a disaster, and it's actually pretty good.
Yeah, that was one thing that did kind of crack me up. They're like, oh, well, it's only a concussion. And it's just like, man, there are guys in sports right now that are out for months with something far more innocent than what Enzo had happened to him.
To be fair, it looked like he broke his neck. So I guess at that point, they can say only concussion.
I mean, obviously the tests have proven that that's all it was, which is pretty surprising. I mean, that could be something that could sideline him for a while. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that.
Yeah, the way he fell, the way he hit, the way he fell, it was frightening. So, yeah, don't expect him to be cleared next.
Yeah, I do not expect him back all that soon. But you know, hopefully he gets back at it. And yeah, it was kind of funny. During the beginning of Jericho's run, we were all bagging on him, but this heel turn, it actually seems like it's taking. For one of the few veterans that people seem to want to cheer all the time, Jericho's finally kind of gotten the crowd against him.
Yeah, Jericho, again, Jericho's good at that. Jericho's good at taking the kernel of truth in what he's saying and twisting it around and really rubbing it in people's faces and, you know, making people hate him for it. Jericho has taken on the role of the disgruntled veteran, tired of all these young whippersnappers disrespecting him. And you know, Jericho's been really good, you know, every week with what he's doing. Jericho's having his most productive run in years at this point, because I certainly don't count the Wyatt feud and the Fandango feud and even a lot of the Punk feud is all that productive, to be honest.
Oh man, Fandango. That's another one where it's just kind of funny how the rest of the show has been so good that garbage has flown under the radar. Yeah. For the most part,
it's not even worth talking about, really. I mean, we haven't really talked about it. I mean, it's the one segment on the show where now we're everything else, the tone has been, you know, a little more seriously. It's the one segment on the show where Vince gets his shits and giggles in, and so I guess, you know, well, I'll let it be. It is what it is.
Yeah,
it's probably saved Tyler Breeze from being cut last week. So,
oh my gosh! And how did we? neither of us. How did neither of us think of Black Friday?
Oh yeah.
That I mean, it's almost as interesting as Raw was this week. Honestly. So, none of those cuts were a surprise.
No, not at all. Nothing.
And I mean, I'm not sure what they would have done. Like, the Barrett thing has been in the works for a while now. I mean, I feel like that report's been out there for a couple of months. And, you know, when he's one of the bigger names getting cut, it's just like, oh, okay. I mean, Cameron hadn't been on TV, whether even in NXT or the, you know, the main roster.
Well, Cameron's actually an interesting one, because supposedly there was another woman on the chopping block, but after Cameron put out a tweet in support of Ryback, it turned to her.
Yeah, I did see that report, and I'm just like, oh, like, I
speculation was Summer Rae would have been on her way out, which I guess she really hasn't been featured in a while. And I mean,
yeah, she just had that little short thing with Becky Lynch recently.
Yeah, well, no, Sasha Banks, but once again, every few weeks it seems they pull Sasha Banks off the TV for some reason. I'm not really sure, but yeah, they pretty much stopped that cold turkey. I mean, they're not. I mean, I guess if there was a woman who was going to go, and maybe they didn't. Oh, I don't want to get into this, but they didn't really want to eliminate any of their minority women. But then Cameron Smoke got a turn, and she's been pretty much persona non grata anyway. So she became the scapegoat and one that they were gonna chop. I mean, you really can't chop Tamina. She's now injured. You can't chop Rosa, you know, when she's on, you know, quote-unquote maternity leave, even though nothing that exists in WWE, but it would look horrible if they if they terminated her. I mean,
yeah, it would have a pretty bad look.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the media, the type of media, the entertainment media that would report on, you know, on sham, going sham on WWE for it would not be the types who would understand the concept of she was horrible at, she's been horrible at everything they've ever, at every role they've ever given her, or tried to give her.
Yeah, yeah. It,
But Cameron gone. I mean, again, none of these were a big loss. I guess all in all, the biggest loss was probably Damian Sandow for what could have been, but they gave up him for some reason. For some reason, they gave up on him last year.
Yeah, I always. It's one of those things that it fascinates me when someone like that gets cut. You know, TNA, I always used to hope that they'd be better in TNA, but no later than when now Tyrus went over there, I knew that that wasn't going to happen.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I guess if I'm going to phrase it, the worst, the biggest loss of what could have been, I guess that would be way better. From where he was that during the Nexus angle to where he ended up, I mean, I think that might be one of the bigger wastes of potential they've ever had. But by the end, he'd been beaten down too much. There was nothing to see.
Yeah, it would have been hard to salvage him. You know, the injuries, I've got to think, have got to play a part in his demise, just because every time they did seem to get ready to push him, an injury occurred, you know, and it wasn't even necessarily his fault, because I'm trying to think of who tossed him into the barricade and his shoulder separated. You know, it just always seemed like the timing for his injuries, you know, injuries are bad, but the timing of the injuries makes things even worse sometimes.
I mean, it wasn't an injury, but the thing that, you know, really began, well, like, I guess began the roller coaster ride of his career was, it's been pretty much admitted to that John Cena, one of the rare times in his career that he pulled that Hulk Hogan, Triple H, Dusty Rhodes style power play, demanded to win the match at SummerSlam 2010 with WWE versus Nexus.
Oh,
that really was that was the wrong move, and that really, really hurt Barrett. And then they never were able to commit to Barrett, you know, beating Cena again, although he did. It one went over him that led to the Cena, you know, held hostage angle that, once again, they never completely committed to. They never, because they were so afraid of losing Cena's merchandise, they never even let him put on made him put on a Nexus shirt. And it was over within a month, and, you know, and then, you know, then Cena just beats Wade Barrett in a nothing match, and that was pretty much the end of Wade Barrett in a main event role, and then even in an upper mid card role, that's when everything started snowballing. Actually, it's not really a snowball; it was the roller coaster of up and down.
It'll be interesting to see. In some ways, I was glad to see that he said he was going to step away for a little bit and just kind of get his stuff in order, and then. See what happens from there. You know, I guess he's another guy to me that, and I think we talked about this with a couple of guys last week, that going over to Japan might be his best bet. if he still wants to do, you know, wrestling.
That's certainly potential there. I mean, I know over in the UK there are homegrown promotions over there that are doing pretty damn good business. You know, crowds of 5,000 and even attempting a big arena one that's attempting a big arena show in the fall with. But, I mean, they're bringing in Kurt Angle to be in the main event, but they're going to sell out, trying to sell out an 11,000 seat building, and there's a very good chance that they'll do it. So there's actually a very strong wrestling right now that for the first time in a long time, and certainly he could ride that wave as well, along with working Japan. So I don't think this is the end of him in wrestling. I don't even know if it's the end of him in WWE, but
right.
I think it's for the best for him to move away for quite a while. I mean, I believe he's still relatively young, or at least mid-30s. I mean, I'm gonna look it up.
I wouldn't say he's probably any older than most of their roster, because I always do love the whole... Because I think every time there is a new era, everyone's still kind of old from the new era.
Right, yeah. He's 35.
Gotcha.
That's still plenty. That's still plenty left in the tank. I'm not too worried about him. I mean, now a guy like Sandow, who he's already getting advertised for indies in America, in this country, which is wrong place. So I mean,
yeah, that is not a surprise.
He's more of a guy to worry about, because it's like he was in the system one time. Before he finally got modicum of push and some level of popularity as Damian Sandow, and of course Damian Sandow is a complete gimmick name that he will not be able to take with him, so that can hurt too. I mean, I guess then of course you could say formally
he's gonna be Samian Dandow.
Oh yeah. Right, something like that, yeah.
I think some of the other guys have done okay. I guess I'm trying to... Trent Beretta. Although, hold on, that's his actual name, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, no, he just shortened it to Beretta.
Yeah, to get around that. He's got New Japan. He gets, so it's good. He got a New Japan, so that was good for him.
Well, and I guess I was trying to think of kind of comparable players that, I wouldn't be surprised to see him pop up on ROH at some juncture.
I mean, Drew Galloway, I mean, the former, what was his name?
Drew McIntyre.
Drew McIntyre, the former Drew McIntyre. I mean, this is a guy who gets to be the TNA champion while working these high dollar UK shows that I was talking about, and also working in Evolve, which is pretty much WWE's developmental territory, and go out there and cut promos bad-mouthing WWE. So.
Well,
the guy who's made the best of everything, almost of everything,
and
real out there.
That was another interesting story that that neither of us thought about was the fact that EC3 was at an Evolve show, and happened.
He's teaming up with Galloway now as an anti WWE tag team.
Oh, are they?
Yeah. So, and once again. There's no one who defines the last 3 years or so of TNA more than EC3, and it just shows how off the radar TNA is at this point. WWE doesn't even care that the TNA champion is appearing on a show with some of their developmental talent, their potential developmental talent. They just don't care. It's not even a big deal anymore.
And
TNA exists.
And it honestly shouldn't be a big deal. Right. Because, yeah, I mean, people complain about the WWE's ratings, but those things are even worse for TNA. But I did think that would be funny to note. But, I mean, those are two guys that, like, I actually, at least what I saw out of Galloway and TNA, it wasn't his fault for the shit sandwiches he was given, as far as I can tell.
He's been bound and determined for the last year or so to prove everyone wrong and to just go out in every show he's booked and do the best he can. And I put all this back in the world for it. Once again, he's sure he's doing all right. He's being able to go everywhere and do everything. And yeah, I mean, there's life after WWE. I mean, it's a hustle. I mean, you've got to work hard.
Right.
And on these, especially on these indies, I mean, there's, once again, we talked before, there's two different types of indies, you know. Well, there's the three different types, because there's the total local yokel indie.
Right.
And there's the, you know, nostalgia indies that bring in a lot of, you know, former top names, and then there's the work rate indies, and you gotta, as the label suggests, you gotta go there with your working shoes on, and obviously, Galloway has been able to do that.
Yeah.
He's pretty much stayed in demand since WWE cut him. I mean, he's working steadily. I think he's getting work just about every weekend, and you know, he's working probably as much as an average WWE guy at this point.
Right, and I'm sure he's at least getting paid somewhere in the neighborhood of what he was getting. And I'm trying to think of, we kind of brought them up a little bit, ROH was another topic that we had slated, because they've had a couple of interesting things happen. Which, one was televised, well, pay-per-view-ized, I suppose, the other was not so televised.
It was filmed, and I'm sure it will air on television, you know. But yeah, I mean, ROH, after we talked about it here, I mean, they've been coasting. I mean, obviously, the big angle they did it, obviously heavily involved with Japan. So the New Japan partnership is very strong, and it's going to continue. And New Japan guys are going to coming to the U.S. you know, semi regularly, and ROH guys are going over there when ROH isn't, when they're not working in ROH. So they've got a good relationship there. What they did do is, and now granted, they're going to be, I believe, taping television in Toronto tomorrow. They're in around my neck of the woods.
Okay.
Last night, but I don't have anyone in my life. I mean, I have people I watch WWE with, but people I go to the local indies with. But I don't know. Talking to people into going to this Ring of Honor thing was just not going to happen. So I do not have a live report, despite the event being 45 minutes from me on last night's Dearborn. But well, okay. That said, I mean, ROH for the last few months of TV has simply been, you know, wrestling with no stories, good wrestling, but, you know,
right,
really no storylines at all. I mean, coasting on, you know, bringing the New Japan guys in, and they finally cut a major angle at the, once again, it's that whole thing of you and I talking about an angle on an ROH pay-per-view that we didn't watch.
yeah, but there are certain implications. I mean, I didn't think that, in general, ROH and New Japan did a good job of integrating each other.
No, that's exactly right. No, they have not. You know, it's just these, you know, quote unquote, you know, IWC Smart Mark dream matches, and just throwing them out there, you know, kind of cold. That's what this has been. But now we've got, we're introducing more storytelling into it. Go ahead.
Even though we didn't see the angle, the outcome of the angle is something that I would imagine will be on ROH TV. And if it isn't, them losing Adam Cole for a significant amount of time again to Japan just really would not be the best thing for them.
I mean, this is obviously going to be, you know, a major focus of the television. I believe. I mean, once again, Adam Cole, you know, joining the Bullet Club, and Adam Cole and the Young Bucks and the Tonging.
Oh yeah, I didn't even know who they were.
Haku Sons.
Oh.
You know, because, well, they didn't bring in, you know, Fale, Cody Hall, a couple other people, and Kenny Omega has visa issues that are keeping him out of the U.S., but he won't be working in the Canadian show because he's a Canadian national, obviously.
Oh, I did not know that, actually.
He's from Winnipeg, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I kind of like his douchebaggery.
Yeah, he is a great douchebag, and it appears Adam Cole will be playing kind of the second in command role as at least as a singles wrestler in the Bullet Club, because I imagine Kenny Omega is going to get the top spot there unless they really really see a lot Adam Cole and want to promote, push him as a world title challenger. I don't see that just yet, but
right.
They did a major heat angle. I mean, definitely a lot of people. I mean, it featured 51 super kicks. I mean, so there was certainly some with a counter at the bottom of the screen that went up with every super kick. So there's certainly some pokiness with the angle. There's a lot. There are parts of it that, you know, ROH diehards did not like. But as a more casual viewer of Ring of Honor, and if they truly want to grow, then yes, they need stories. They need angles. They need big heat angles. You know, you can't just coast up, you know, the days of just coasting on, you know, putting together a so-called dream match and just promoting it and hoping if 500 to 1,000 people show up. You know, those days are kind of over. I mean, they're owned by a major corporation that sees them as, you know, I don't mean this as an insult, but major time film. For their stations, and I don't mean just like a paid programming junk or anything, but as a major feature of their local programming. So,
right.
And so, yeah, and they, I'm sure they want to grow. I mean, they've got this relationship with New Japan, so they got some of the best. They got access to some of the best talent in the world to come in very frequently, and
well,
it just needs to be presented in a different way, presented as something that's important. And
I feel like they've done a good job, really, of kind of retaining a lot of their talent. Recently, I guess Adam Cole's one of those guys that I'd eventually like to see a WWE run out of him.
Yeah.
But there are certain other guys that I'm just kind of enjoying. Moose is the guy that still needs some development, but man, that guy is crazy athletic.
Yeah, I mean, and you know what? It's something that ROH does have to offer their talent for staying is, hey, when we're not booking you, go over to New Japan. They want you. They'll feature you. You'll have that double dip of income. I mean, so that is a good thing. Once again,
yeah, and
I believe Moose's contract. Said Moose's contract is up this summer. Adam Cole's contract is up at the end of the year. They want to keep these people, and you know, a big part of keeping these people is giving them something to do. Something, you know, money obviously important, but also professional challenges and you know, things to sink their teeth into. And so, yeah. So again, as I said, the way it sounded, the angle had some hokiness to it, but. In the end, you know, I think it's a good thing that ROH and TV now has a running storyline to go into the next, you know, weeks and months of television.
Well, yeah, and if Cole is the number two to Omega, he'll be the number one in ROH. You know, he'll be a leader there, and yeah, he's really great. I love watching him work, both in the ring, and I mean, he's pretty good on the mic too. More Adam Cole is not a bad thing, baby.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And you know, Adam Cole and the Young Bucks, and now, and that's an interesting thing also that happened on the show last night is, you know, they did have Adam Page join the Bullet Club. So again, someone who's been, I can't say I've seen enough of him to really make a great opinion, but obviously again, someone they're high on, someone they can put in a group situation like this and hopefully flourish.
Yeah, he's done a pretty good job. He was with BJ Whitmer in the Decade. He's a young guy, and there is a lot of talent there. I mean, he's not the biggest guy, but he's pretty good in the ring, and they haven't given him too much mic time, so that's a little hard to judge. But you know, I'm not going to argue with his inclusion. He kind of needed something to do afterwards. I'm not sure how much of a be interesting to see how much of a singles wrestler he is. Like, yeah. I mean, he's probably going to wrestle singles, but, you know, again, he probably needs a little more development time as a little bit of a younger guy.
And if ROH obviously wants to go full bore into the promotion of the Bullet Club, including selling the t-shirts on their, off of their website and on their live events, then they need guys to be Bullet Club who are always going to be working at, you know, every ROH taping and pay-per-view major show, so that would be certainly a role that he can fit. Because they're not going to have Omega and Haku Sons and, you know, the regular Japan. I mean, they'll have the Young Bucks for the most part because, you know, they've got the exclusive American rights to the Young Bucks.
Right.
So yeah, so that they'll be, you know, they'll be pretty good there. And then the other interesting note from ROH this week is they kind of out of nowhere switched the tag team championships.
Yeah, that was definitely an interesting one to me, considering the War Machine, who is Hansen, who won their, and the WWE isn't the only one to break in new talent who happens to be fairly old. Hansen, who I believe is like 34 or something like that, but he won, what was that?
It's the Race to the Top tournament, is it? Or the, not the Race to the Top, but what is it that they do every year?
The Top Prospect tournament.
Top Prospect, yes.
So, yeah, I mean, he just won that last year, and, we may have a little bit of a soundtrack here.
Do you know what that is?
No, I don't know what that is.
You do.
Oh. something else that we have neglected to bring up, but we can later.
Oh, yeah. That's right, baby. That's my alarm in the morning.
The rock clock.
Oh, my goodness. I've used it. It's interesting.
there is one failing to it that I would like him to address, which is you have to set it daily, and that is a little bit of a problem.
Oh, you do?
I have two awake times during the week. I have weekday awake, and I have weekend awake. Both are a consistent time frame. So that to me is a little bit of a fault of
the rock clock.
He's ready to improve the rock clock app already. as he does this a sleepy video for everybody after his 4 a.m. workout. And he has nowhere to do it but the car because, you know, why not be on 24/7? But where were we on ROH there?
The tag team title switch.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, because we were talking about Hansen winning the top prospects, but the guy that he finished the tournament with was Raymond Rowe a couple of years ago. And they had Hansen. I think Rowe was in the same tournament. But
I don't watch regularly.
Anyway, because they were the finals and they ended up teaming up, which was better because Hansen didn't seem to have a spot at that point, and they needed something for Rowe to do. And War Machine's been a pretty popular tag team outside of the unfortunate timing of Raymond Rowe's motorcycle accident.
Yeah.
Which held things up for quite a few months.
Yeah, but no, they've done very good with them. There's, once again, something kind of different in ROH, and different is good. They have, they built them up, they gave them the tag title in, and they had a pretty strong run as champions. I mean, I could see them thinking, since they're not, the traditional, ROH-style tag team, I could see that, having the unconventional team be the champions for a while, I could see that, being an idea, and then moving it on to the more, well, Daniels and Kazarian can certainly have, good matches with everyone. They're that kind of team. They're in complete, their team that they're in complete sync with each other. They, as I said, I'm not on Chris Jericho's podcast. They want to just be heels. They don't want to be cool. They're just there to, be the heel tag team, and they can certainly have good matches with everybody. I mean, I'm not terribly upset about the change. I'm sure Hanson and Rowe will still have their place in ROH.
Yeah, it wasn't so much of a problem with the decision. It was just curious timing, honestly, because War Machine had just beaten the Briscoes, despite them not really being a consistent tag team player.
Right.
But when you give them that win, you're thinking that they're going to keep on rolling with the titles for a while, and to have them drop the titles in a house show, nonetheless, very soon thereafter, is a curious choice.
Yeah, it is that. It is weird timing. It does kind of, invalidates other words. Where some word I'm thinking in my head right now. The work that of Hanson and Rowe finally beating the Briscoes, because going into it they built up that they'd had more previous matches that the Briscoes won, and then finally they finally beat the Briscoes, and now they're just not the tag team champions anymore. So yeah, it is curious timing like that. I assume that there's an idea, there's something, there's some sort of a plan here. I don't never thought of ROH as a company that completely that rides by the seat of their pants at all. So I assume there's something to this. Maybe they'll get them back. Maybe it's just maybe they're just being moved into another role so that Daniels and Kazarian can have those traditional, ROH style tag team matches with the other teams, Motor City Machine Guns and Seidel and Seidel and HCH still teaming, or
I have no idea. They've been together, they've feuded, they got back together. I haven't seen them together too much recently. Well, and plus, like you said, they've really coasted on New Japan here the last couple of months. Well, I shouldn't say a couple of months. It's been at least 6 weeks, though. that they've let these kind of dream match type things just rule their airwaves.
Right.
And probably at least another week or two before they get the shows that are recorded out there.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure exactly what they're doing. Well, actually, shows are actually only being recorded tomorrow, so from Wednesday to Saturday, but maybe kind of a quick turnaround. Maybe they'd have enough time to insert a couple of things from the last night's house show into the TV, plus with some mix it with some pay per view highlights and interviews and backstage interviews and things like that. Put together a TV show. We'll see about that one. I mean.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I guess I'm just glad that I get to watch some type of alternative since I'm still, stuck not watching Lucha Underground.
And I guess, I guess we got a few minutes, but we could finish off with, I know you didn't see it, but, oh my goodness, that women's,
Oh, the first blood match?
It was not a first blood. It was called No Mas, which was their.
I quit.
Lucha Underground, Lucha version of I Quit. Yes, women bleeding, men getting involved, beating up on women. I mean, it was quite the spectacle. And I don't know if I necessarily need to see anything like it again, but for what it was, I enjoyed it. And I mean, once again. Lucha Underground's looking to make some new, new promotional partners and keep this thing going. I'm not sure if a woman bleeding all over the place and is the right way to go about it. But I guess
right.
But I guess there the women's fights on UFC and Fox. So I mean, maybe it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be interesting to know because I mean. Everyone seemed to think that it was a pretty good match. So, maybe that outweighs the gore factor that was involved.
Yeah, I mean, for that match, for everything they did for that match, the whole presentation of it absolutely, the gore, It enhanced what it enhanced, blood in the key spots, still works, still add to a match. I mean, I guess I could live without it ever seeing it again, especially if it's. Although there's people who speculate that was because Lucha Underground is produced like an actual television show than a wrestling show that they use fake blood instead of a blade to cause the blood. So.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's that bad of a plan.
Right, no.
Anything to help, save the talent, some scarring in the future is probably not a bad thing. You don't need a road map in your head like Dusty Rhodes had.
No. you don't need that, especially as you get later in life, that really, really doesn't look good on the high definition era of television.
So, I guess I hope to take the time to watch that at some juncture. Do they do that online anywhere?
I think every week they put the. You can find it online. I can send it to you, or sometimes they put the right on their official YouTube. They put the main event from the week before up.
Oh, okay.
At some point, during the week.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I think that's a good, nice, bloody note to go out on.
Yep.
So, for at DeFrango11, at Chris Calamita, for the brand at Stunt Granny, everybody have a good night.
Later.